Okay, let's dive right into it. We're opening up a really ancient text today.
Yeah, fascinating one.
Specifically, we're looking at Ezra chapter 4. Think of it like a historical snapshot, a case study almost, of what happens when God's people actually start building something important.
Exactly. And our sources, well, it's the biblical text itself,
Yeah.
primarily. But we're also drawing on some, analysis that helps clarify the context, the background.
Right. And our goal here, our mission, if you like, is to really walk through what happened in this chapter, understand the very real challenges these builders were up against, and then pull out lessons that are, frankly, surprisingly relevant for your life today.
Yeah, specifically thinking about how this ancient story can actually encourage obedience and maybe more importantly, strengthen your faith when things inevitably get tough.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. Where does chapter 4 kick off?
Well, you've got the people, the children of the captivity, they're finally back in Jerusalem, and they have this huge task,
The temple.
rebuilding the temple of the Lord. I mean, it's this moment of incredible hope, real purpose, a fresh start after exile.
You can almost feel the energy, can't you? They're back home, they're getting their hands dirty, laying foundations for this like central place of worship.
Absolutely. But then almost immediately, opposition, it just pops up.
Yeah, the text calls them the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin. Who are these guys exactly?
Good question. The sources suggest these weren't, the original inhabitants who were always there. These were likely people groups settled in the region earlier, during the Assyrian exile.
Okay.
And they approached the builders with an offer.
An offer which sounds pretty good on the surface, anyway.
It does. They basically say, hey, let us build with you. We seek your God, just like you do. They even claim they've been sacrificing a God since the time of King Esarhaddon.
Okay, hold on. So they're presenting themselves as fellow worshipers, wanting to join in this sacred project. Sounds like a potential alliance. What do the leaders, Zerubbabel and Jeshua, do?
This is key. They show remarkable discernment. It's not just a polite no thanks.
Right.
They give a really specific refusal. They say, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, you have no part with us in building a house for our God. We alone will build it for the Lord God of Israel, just as King Cyrus of Persia commanded us.
Wow, that's direct. And it's rooted in the specific command they received.
Exactly.
And maybe that's the first big lesson right there. You know, not every offer of help, even if it sounds spiritual, is actually aligned with God's specific plan for you.
Absolutely. Accepting the wrong kind of help or help with the wrong motives can actually derail the whole thing. Discernment is crucial. You have to guard the purpose God gave you. And
Yeah.
what happens next is telling. When their offer gets rejected, they don't just like shrug and leave.
No, it flips completely, doesn't it? The resistance ramps up.
Immediately, they shift tactics. The text says they actively work to undermine the builders. They weaken the hands of the people, trouble them in building.
Weaken their hands. That sounds like discouragement, maybe sabotage.
Could be both.
Yeah.
And it gets more sophisticated. They hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose.
Hired counselors. That sounds almost like legal maneuvering, bureaucratic warfare.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
It wasn't just physical obstruction, it was a calculated campaign on multiple fronts. And it wasn't short-lived either.
How long did this go on?
The text says this opposition lasted through Cyrus's entire reign and continued right into the reign of King Darius. They were relentless.
Wow. Persistent. And they didn't just stay local, did they? They went higher up.
Oh, yeah. They took it straight to the top, engaging in like serious lobbying, sending formal letters of accusation to the Persian kings.
Okay.
There's a mention of an accusation during the reign of Ahasuerus, and then later, under King Artaxerxes, a really detailed letter. This one's sent by big names, Rehum the chancellor, Shimshai the scribe.
Official channel.
Very official. And interestingly, the letter was written and interpreted in the Syrian tongue.
Syrian tongue, Aramaic.
Exactly. Aramaic was the sort of lingua franca, the administrative language of the Persian Empire.
So this wasn't just some local spat. This was plugged into the whole imperial system.
Precisely. Which made their strategy very effective at hitting the builders politically and legally.
So what did this big official Aramaic letter actually accuse them of?
It was clever, really.
Yeah.
False claims wrapped in a cloak of loyalty to the king. They accused the Jews of rebuilding a rebellious and bad city.
Rebellious and bad. Strong words.
Yeah. And specifically, they alleged the Jews were setting up walls and foundations so they could stop paying taxes, the toll, tribute and custom owed to the empire.
Ah, always follow the money. They framed it as protecting the king's revenue.
And the king's honor. They even claimed, you know, we eat the salt of the palace, meaning they were loyal servants, and they couldn't just stand by and see the king dishonored like this.
Wow, that's quite the spin. Did they offer any proof?
They urged the king to check the official records, the archives. They were banking on Jerusalem's known history of, well, past conflicts and sedition against previous empires.
Using past history, maybe twisted a bit, to start present progress. So what did King Artaxerxes do? Did he buy it?
He took it very seriously. He ordered a search of the records, and the records did confirm that historically Jerusalem had been a place of insurrection and rebellion against kings.
Ouch. So based on that confirmation of the city's past, what was his command?
He sent a decree straight back to Rehum and Shimshai. The order was clear. Stop the work immediately. Use force if you have to.
Just like that.
Just like that. Stop it until he gave a different command, and he added a warning. Something like, make sure you do this. Why should this damage grow and hurt the kings? His main concern was stability and revenue.
And the result on the ground in Jerusalem?
Immediate. Decisive. Rehum Shimshai, their whole crew went to Jerusalem, used force and power, and made the Jews stop building the house of God.
So the work just stopped.
Completely ceased. The text is specific. It stopped until the second year of the reign of King Darius. That's a significant pause. Years, likely.
Okay, so this whole story from Ezra 4, the hopeful start, the cunning opposition, the bureaucratic shutdown, the work grinding to a halt. What does that tell us? How can understanding this ancient struggle actually, you know, encourage our obedience today, strengthen our faith?
It's packed with lessons, really. First, maybe the most obvious one, expect opposition.
Right.
The moment they started making progress on God's work, resistance showed up. So when you step out to do what God's called you to, don't be shocked by pushback.
Yeah, it's almost a sign you're doing something right.
It often is. Encountering resistance doesn't necessarily mean you're wrong. It might mean you're hitting a nerve doing something that matters in the spiritual realm. Understanding that reframes the whole experience, doesn't
right.
it? It strengthens faith because you see struggle as part of the process, not a sign of failure.
That's a huge shift in perspective. Opposition isn't a red flag to stop. Maybe it's a green flag saying, keep going, this is important.
Exactly. Second lesson, notice the tactic of discouragement. The adversaries didn't just, you know, attack with swords. They used sophisticated stuff. Legal challenges, lobbying, false accusations, bureaucratic delays through those official channels.
The Aramaic letters.
Right. And spiritual resistance often comes at you subtly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It comes as emotional fatigue, frustrating roadblocks, confusing conflicts, maybe lies or rumors spreading.
Things designed to just wear you down.
Precisely. Recognizing these as tactics, not just random bad luck, helps you guard against them. Prayer, community, staying focused.
Yeah.
It helps you resist that drain on your obedience.
Okay, so expect opposition. Recognize discouragement tactics.
Yeah.
What else?
Third. Delays are not defeats. This is huge.
Yeah, the work stopped for years.
Imagine how they felt. The disappointment, the confusion. Did we hear God wrong? But it wasn't the end of the story for the temple. It would start again.
Right.
And that's vital for your faith, too. When your progress stalls, when you face setbacks, when things just aren't moving, it doesn't mean God has ditched his plan for you.
It's just a pause.
It can be part of the process. A pause season where God might be working behind the scenes or maybe teaching you something. Holding on to the vision during those delays, well, that requires faith, and it builds faith.
That's really encouraging for those waiting times. Okay, one more.
Yes. Finally, look at the leaders. Stay focused. Zerubbabel and Jeshua refused that initial offer of help because it wasn't aligned with the specific command they got from God via Cyrus.
They stuck to their assignment.
Exactly. They stayed rooted in what they were called to do. For you, obedience often means staying focused on your specific assignment from God. Don't get sidetracked by tempting, but compromising, offers of help, or distracted by accusations or opposition trying to pull you off course.
That single-minded focus is obedience.
It really is.
So putting it all together, this isn't just some dusty old story. It's like a playbook for navigating resistance in our own lives.
Yeah, definitely.
Understanding that opposition is normal, that discouragement is a tactic, that delays aren't final, and that staying focused is key. It equips you, doesn't it? It helps you stand firm, stay obedient, and actually let your faith grow stronger through the hard stuff.
It turns the struggle from something that defeats you into something that shapes you, part of the journey.
Absolutely. So as you think about this deep dive into Ezra chapter 4, maybe consider this question. Where in your life right now are you facing opposition or maybe just frustrating delays? And how might understanding this ancient pattern change how you see that situation and perhaps encourage you to keep going?